Though the electronic herd was born and nursed in the Cold War era, its members could never gather the critical mass, speed, or reach in that overly regulated, walled-up system. Most countries maintained capital controls, at least until the 1970s, so capital could not move across borders the way it can in today's globalization system. This made it much harder to get a global herd together. In the relatively closed economies of the pre-1970s Cold War system, a government's own monetary policy completely dominated the setting of its own interest rates, and a government's own fiscal policy was far and away the dominant instrument for stimulating growth. Also during the Cold War, the U.S. and Soviet governments could easily justify the high taxes needed for fiscal policy by invoking the Cold War. "We need your tax dollars to fight the enemy, put a man on the moon, and build a new highway system so we can move our army around faster." At the same time, many developing countries could muddle through by milking one of the superpowers, namely the United States, the Soviet Union, or China, or by milking the international lending institutions to fund a dam, support an army, or build a highway. And because the citizens of these developing countries were not nearly as aware as they are today of how everyone else in the world was living, they were ready to tolerate lower living standards that come from having a relatively closed economy. But with the gradual lifting of capital controls in the 1970s, the democratizations of finance, technology, and information, the end of the Cold War system, and the fall of walls everywhere, there suddenly emerged a vast global plain where investor herds from many different countries could roam freely. It was on this wide-open plain, later expanded into cyberspace, that the electronic herd could really graze, grow, multiply, and eventually gather into powerful supermarkets. The supermarkets are the mega markets of Tokyo, Frankfurt, Sydney, Singapore, Shanghai, Hong Kong, Bombay, Sao Paulo, Paris, Zurich, Chicago, London, and Wall Street. They are where the biggest members of the electronic herd come together, exchange information, execute their trades, and issue stocks and bonds for different companies for the herd to feed upon. According to University of Chicago globalization expert Saskia Sassen, by the end of 1997, 25 supermarkets controlled 83% of the world's equities under institutional management and accounted for roughly half of global market capitalization. That's around $20.9 trillion. This electronic herd and the supermarkets where it gathers to feed and procreate have become important international actors in the globalization system. While they cannot go to war or invade a country like nation states can, supermarkets are able to shape the behavior of nation states in many areas. And that is why I have argued that while the Cold War system was a system based on a balance between states, the globalization system is a system based on a balance between states and states, and between states and supermarkets. Adjusting to the power of the supermarkets and the electronic herd requires a whole different mindset for leaders, particularly in emerging markets. To put it in a phrase, all world leaders have to think like governors now. Governors in American states get to make some decisions, just like presidents and prime ministers. They even get to send out the National Guard sometimes. But their main job these days is enticing the electronic herd and supermarkets to invest in their states, doing whatever it takes to keep them there and constantly living in dread that they will leave. Kings, dictators, emirs, sultans, traditional presidents, and prime ministers, they're all being reduced to governors now. In the fall of 1997, I visited Qatar, the tiny Arab oil state off the east coast of Saudi Arabia, and was invited one afternoon to have lunch with the emir, Sheikh Hamad bin Khalifa Al Thani. He is a delightful man and smart like a fox, but he is a man used to giving orders, not taking them. He was asking me about the economic crisis in Malaysia and Southeast Asia, and I was telling him how the electronic herd and the supermarkets were punishing Malaysia for Mahathir's excesses, including his funding of the world's two tallest buildings. Sheikh Hamad listened and then said something that sounded so much like a governor, not an emir. He said to me, "Well, I guess I better not build any tall buildings here. The markets might not like that." The way in which leaders, individuals, investors, and companies are all learning to adjust to this new system of globalization is really the hallmark of the late 20th century. There is just one more thing I have to say about it, though. You ain't seen nothing yet.